Choosing Partners Week on the PhD cast. Three rampant examples of partnerships made this week as Google strikes a licensing deal with Nestle, Nokia ties up with Microsoft, and Australia makes a deal with the Liberals. This is the PhD cast. I'm Chris Stevenson. Joining me on the PhD cast this week, I've got PhD cast regular Sue Genny.
Hello, how's it going?
And also joining us in her fourth joining us is Emma.
Hello.
All things social media at PhD. How are you doing?
Very good, thank you.
Very, very cool. And all things digital at PhD. Fifth time on the PhD cast, Lauren Oldham.
Hello.
How are you doing?
I'm good.
Everyone looking forward to their weekend?
Yeah, can't wait. it's actually Monday.
Yeah, I know.
And I am looking forward to the weekend.
I am looking forward to the weekend.
Yeah, so...
We can't have an election theme.
Yeah, okay, so that did occur to me that we could pretend it's Friday, but we are going to be talking on the PhD cast about what happened on Saturday, which
or
would make...
maybe we're a group of...
witches.
Fortune tellers or something.
Yeah.
Exactly. Well, we're not.
Don't listen, you don't want to know what happens.
Yeah. Spoilers. Well, that's good. Okay, let's get going. Google has struck a licensing deal with Nestle to name the next Android software KitKat. If you go to Google's Android page, you see a full-on KitKat bar to describe the candy with an Android-themed wallpaper. Lauren, what's going on?
Well, the history behind this apparently is that the Android team actually eats a lot of Kit Kats, and all of the different software has been going in alphabetical order, so they've gotten to K's, and they needed a K candy slash dessert, and because they love Kit Kats so much, they decided to go Kit Kat.
So for anyone who doesn't know, Android is the operating software?
Yes, for... a lot of different devices, not just Google devices, but it underlays, you know, Samsung and HTC devices as well.
Cool. And each iteration of that software is named after candy.
That's correct.
So what was A?
They actually didn't start with A.
What
I
did
think
they start
started
with
C, actually.
Mm. What was that?
That's a good question. I can't remember. I remember ice cream sandwich. That's I.
Had donut.
And
me.
Donut.
And
what else did they have?
I don't know any.
I didn't know any.
They had Gingerbread Man.
Oh, that's right.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Gingerbread. Yeah, I remember that one now. It's easy when you know the answer.
Yeah.
and so the development team got to K and they went Kit Kat.
Yes. And so they went Kit Kat, and the story is that they did it because that's the candy that they used to eat as developer team. But it conveniently tied in with a deal with Nestle and kind of a partnership and promotion across both categories.
So this is I think fairly unprecedented, sponsoring an actual operating software. What do we all make of it?
But when you say sponsor, it's interesting that it's confirmed now that no money's changed hands from either party. So it's a dual branding opportunity. So Google, as Lauren said, decided that they wanted to call it KitKat. They approached Nestle with it, and sort of instantly Nestle said yes, amazing, great opportunity, and wanted to go ahead. So I think it's quite interesting from that point that it isn't a sponsorship deal and it isn't a monetary commercial thing. It's a pure dual branding opportunity. So both of them have done different sort of activations and different things to promote the partnership.
Yeah, I can't work out if it's a stroke of kind of genius or pure Android introspective marketing. Like, how it's a little bit arrogant to go, oh, we eat Kit Kat, so let's just call it a Kit Kat, and then let's all get a multinational brand on board to bring that to life. Or is it actually just really clever and they're trying to build awareness of the Kit Kat platform using Kit Kat? So, and that's loads of free media, and if they didn't actually pay any money for it, awesome. So, I mean, I can't work it out. It's weird. It's just so unprecedented, as you said.
Yeah, man, I'm going to verge on the stroke of genius. I kind of think you've got a situation where you've got a chocolate bar, which is really well known, really well established, and then you've got an operating software which is in need of a platform. I mean, everybody wins on this. That Android kind of get that mass FMCG platform to communicate Android, and KitKat get a lot of kudos,
but,
right?
Does it make sense, though?
Like, if you're Nestle, it's just kind of like, you can't believe your luck. Nestle. And Google rings up and says,
honestly,
hi, can we, you know, use
I'm going to go markety wankiness on you, but I'm going to say KitKat, take a break. You always take a break with your phone. There's kind of a linkage there, slightly stretchy.
Oh,
I feel like a stretch.
That's not like a post-rationalization.
But no, that's I don't know, they're the only kind of connection I can see between the two brands. But Nestle said that, you know, that they're interested in expanding their digital, marketing opportunities, and this just kind of happened to be a great one for them.
I completely agree. It's a great, great marketing, and loads of brands, I mean, loads of FMCG and kind of non-digital brands will have massive quick wins by just associating with digital brands. That's kind of already seeing that quite a lot in media and in marketing. It just feels like such a departure, and I think from I would argue one of Android's kind of barriers is understanding it. It's like comprehension of it's quite difficult. Even then, I had no idea that they called their updates based on Candy. So only someone who's actually quite into the brand would probably know that story and that backstory to it. So the big mass question is Android. I don't understand, why is it better? An association with KitKat does nothing to address that challenge and that barrier to adoption, so it's just getting it out there.
Well, but the thing is, I mean, that might be barrier in and of itself. I mean, making Android seem big and mainstream and safe and solid and accessible is perhaps
just like a KitKat
is perhaps exactly what they need. And the TechCrunch article that refers to this points out that Nestle will produce 50 million KitKat bars with an Android mascot on them.
Vouchers and competitions on pack and all that kind of stuff.
This is really a fascinating example of actually a chocolate bar becoming a media platform.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And KitKat aren't strangers to that as well. They did the not necessarily a media platform, but doing something different. And it's the whole Japan message thing that they did, and being, congratulations or whatever. And KitKat means something in Japan.
So as media practitioners, right, if Google came to us and said, would KitKat Media be a viable option for this, for their strategy? So we've got to launch a new version of our operating system. Would we recommend putting it on KitKat?
I kind of think if you're utilising Source, which is PhD's global proprietary operating system, if you could plan 50 million impacts on that of owned media without anything changing hands, then I would certainly say, as a starter for 10, it stacks up.
And you'd be told that you'd have to name it something to do with candy, which would sort of take you down a certain path.
And you'd be leveraging and tapping into popular culture, which is exactly what Android needs to do.
I think it makes a lot of sense. If that is their theme around this, you know, naming it down the alphabet and stuff like that, then to get to, instead of just naming it a donut or naming it this, then to me it actually makes sense to then make it a brand partnership, because, you know, these products will exist, these candies and different things, then, you know, that it almost seems quite, if that's the Android's approach and their strategy, that actually makes a lot of sense to sort of partner with a candy brand. I think it makes a lot of sense.
Why does it make sense?
I think it's interesting because it makes sense because the opportunity is there to do cross promotion, but this is the first time they've ever done a branded name. All the other ones have been fairly
generic. Yeah.
Eclair, that was another one. They've always done just generic.
Can't wait to Viennetta. Does that class as well?
Well, it does beg the question, like, how many Yorkie candy manufacturers are now going to get in queue to be?
Yeah.
So if future gazing, what could L be? L is the next one, right?
Yeah.
I can't think of any confectionery beginning with L. Now you said it. Lemon drops.
Generic, so perhaps we
could invent a chocolate bar just for the opportunity in 18 months time for Google to sponsor us,
possibly.
Done.
Done. Right. Brilliant. And so with that, moving on to another partnership formed in the last week, that between Microsoft and Nokia. Microsoft bought Nokia's device business, stepping squarely into the hardware side of smartphones, joining, of course, the other big players, Apple and Google, for that matter, in this area. So the message clearly, anything that Google and Apple can do, Microsoft can do too. Can they?
Oh, don't know.
Well, they can do, but maybe not well.
Yeah. Oh, go on. Controversy.
I think that, my personal opinion, having had a Windows phone for a brief, short amount of time, it's just not a great operating system. It's really, I mean, good on them for trying something new.
Good on you, Microsoft.
They took a risk. They tried something new, and there are people out there that actually like the tiles and the setup of a Windows phone, but it's just, I don't think it's necessarily as easy to use as iOS is, and for that matter, Android, because Android was modeled off of iOS.
Spot the iOS fanboy.
Oh, no, no, no. I have an Android phone, but I have an iPad. So I have all...
She's like operating system left, right, and center.
I love your OS agnosticism.
Yeah. Yes, I tried to be.
Well, not even agnostic, it's embracing all of them.
Except
right.
for Microsoft, apparently.
Yeah. I mean, Nokia has struggled in recent years. I mean, can anyone think of... It used to. I remember Nokia phones being like the must-have phone. Yeah, and then suddenly it just lost its way, and obviously it got massively overtaken by Apple. And I mean, I would question: is it too little, too late for that company and that brand? So,
and they never sort of. I mean, they went all out with their Lumia phone and that launch, and they did that huge sort of like big stunts and activation and all sorts of things. But again, just didn't. Take, you know, I think it's sort of at that point everyone's, you know, with your iOS or your Android, and so many people are now just embedded into those, and you know, I think they struggle to get that back.
I think one of the issues as well is that you have to do something very dramatic and game changing in order to make an impact and really get a lot of share in this category now. So, you know, the as Emma said, the groups have kind of been established, and the only way you're going to get switching is if you do something super crazy that everyone loves, and it's just like the new, it's basically launching the iPhone now. It's something that is going to make it so different that everyone's going to want to switch.
Which is such an amazing operating system.
And this now does seem to be the model. So obviously Apple established this, Google followed suit by becoming hardware manufacturers themselves. Off the back of their Nexus, and now Microsoft taking this in house as well. Software companies becoming hardware. Is this the ultimate rise of software over hardware, do we think?
I think it's an interesting question, because I don't know, this is just for debate. What's the hierarchy? Do people buy their phones first and then for the operating system for phones?
It's interesting, because that was for the implicit part of my question in asking it.
Because I don't know, actually.
What do people choose?
I go for the phone, personally.
Do you?
Yeah, I would. So if it's an awesome phone with awesome... Because when I say phone, in my head as a...
Hardware.
...a dumb consumer, phone has got to be the package. So yeah, it's hardware first and foremost, but... Whatever makes the magic happen, I don't really care. I don't really think about hardware versus software.
So survey one, I decided that I want my phone. I decided I want to go Android, and therefore I picked the phone that I thought would be the best Android experience. So the one built by Google.
Are we seeing that? Is that?
I think as I said, when people are sort of now embedded into one of those operating systems, I now think that when you come to choose your phone now. You've invested in that system, you've bought apps, you might have bought music, whatever it is, then so now when you go to choose a new phone, you stick with that operating system. So you look at the phones, the handsets that are within your operating system. So with Apple you've got the 4 or 5 and whatever. But if you're Android, I think you think, right, I'm staying with Android, but perhaps I'll go for Samsung. Oh, that new HTC looks quite good, but I have to stick with Android because that's what I know and love and I'm used to.
So that's interesting, because you're implying actually that there's a and So there are actually two different categories. If you're Apple, you think Apple, right? You kind of don't even think about the operating system. If you're Android, you think Android first. So I can only see then a massive increase and benefit for Android in the long term, because as people come off, you kind of have more of a, not, I wouldn't say loyalty, but it's more of a, options to be in that part of the category.
On Wednesday, here's my fortune teller opportunity this week. On Wednesday, when Apple announced their new iPhones, which from the rumors are basically going to be iPhone 5C and iPhone 5S, 5C being 5 and color, so they're looking at plastic, cheaper phones that don't have colors on them, and then the standard iPhones that we're all aware of, you're going to have more options in the iOS category. So you might have some opportunity to choose what you want to do. It'll still be pretty much the same iOS, like operating system. And then you've got, from an Android perspective, definitely all the different types of handset makers. But just because you're Android doesn't mean that the Android on every, like Samsung versus Nexus, etc., is actually the same. So you actually are kind of choosing slightly different operating systems every time you switch your handset provider, because they all take Android and build on it and make it their own. So you've got a big pool of Android, but it's all kind of fragmented. And so I would throw, yes, there's the iOS camp, yes, there's the Android camp, and I'd throw in people that are switchers as well, because yes, I think the majority of people are stuck in either way, because once you invest in apps, you're pretty much not going to want to lose all your apps and investment and go to some other platform.
Unless you leave your tablet in a taxi.
unless you do that, and then you're forced to switch or choose whatever you want. And I think that third category is probably someone who's looking at the feature set, and whether or not it be a software feature set or a handset feature set, but that is what they're looking for. They're looking at those opportunities of what's the latest and greatest type thing.
And so, I would argue, just me on myself, but that's probably where the majority of people and decisions happen. So because of that, to answer the question, effectively we're saying it's still a combination of software and handset, and it's going to be whatever the hardware, whatever the phone that comes out that does that.
Yeah.
But that will win.
But big implications certainly going forward for any brand that's marketing phones, be it software or hardware, going forward. There's undoubtedly an increasingly complex purchase journey emerging, right?
And what we'll end up doing, given like tyranny of choice stuff, we'll go back to the lowest common denominator. So things like a big cool handset, regardless of the operating system or the owner of the hardware, arguably becomes about what's the big selling point so people can navigate through that confusion.
I think that'd be one play, but I think you'll also get some kind of inherent loyalty / inertia into some operating systems.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that'll also come into play. And then there'll also be, you know, tie-ins with things like KitKat, which bring whole new people into the second class. So an increasingly complex journey with very different forces coming into play. But it's certainly not Snake 2. It's now out
really
to go buy a Nokia.
Because then we're saying, because Android, that going back to the Android thing, I can't. That's the only example I can think of an operating system becoming a brand. So like, we're talking about Android, which is like an operating system. It's not a tangible thing. That just becomes quite a strange, strange thought.
Well, I think it's very tangible when you actually use it, because it becomes a tangible user.
But as
Lauren
says, you don't really ever use Android in its purest form. You use Android based on what platform you're using it.
Unless you're using Nexus.
Oh, unless you're using Nexus. And
which,
of course, a Chromebook.
Which I do. of course, and Chromebooks or other versions of Nexus, be it small or bigger tablets. We should declare that we work on Google here at PhD in terms of a full declaration. So that covers Google and Nestle, and it covers Nokia and Microsoft. Our third great partnership of the week is the pact that Australia itself has made with a new party, a new government, in one of the oft-quoted statements from the weekend, Australia is under new management. Let's talk specifically on some of the coverage that had emerged. Let's start with Mumbrella's report that the ABC's online vote survey, the ABC Vote Compass, received more than 1 million responses in the 4.5 weeks since it launched. The vote compass allowed ABC to conduct mapping of vote attitudes by issue, issues including asylum seekers, taxation, foreign aid, and indeed even the formation of the Republic. A statement from Anthony Green said, "It's allowed us to dig into it on an electorate by electorate level. So it's a true broad survey of voter attitudes." That was a quote from Bradford. So a phenomenal, interesting tool that was brought to bear. First of all, Vote Compass. Does anyone do it? What do we make of it? And what do we make of the fact that over a million people have taken part in this?
I did it. I really liked it. I thought it was really clever. I think that the BBC did a very similar version across the UK elections. So there's obviously those learnings that they've probably employed across the ABC. I thought it was a really interesting way, especially when I think the political climate we've been through is very confused, and there's a lot of people find it difficult to navigate across that. So some tools like this really do help you kind of introspect and ask the right questions. So I think it's actually, from a political point of view, quite interesting, and a social tool, quite interesting. And I think it's also, they've used the results and used the data from that, from an ABC point of view, in quite interesting ways. So they continue to use updates and they use it as part of their broadcast. So it's created a really, it just shows how data can become really valuable to kind of present the story and present the news. So for me, that was a great use of that kind of data set by the ABC.
And then that quote earlier was from Gillian Bradford, rather, who's the ABC federal election producer. She went on to say that we can't say it matches precisely 1 million unique users, but it has brought a richness and depth to the coverage which we wouldn't have otherwise have found or would have had. And this is the power now of social, yeah, to kind of bring this depthness and richness to debates like this.
Agreed.
And done.
That is correct.
It gives when I've sort of flicked through maybe a bit of coverage here, or certainly back at home, and every channel is saying exactly the same thing and reading through the same new press release that's gone out and things like that. So I think tools like this are actually very interesting to give that sort of differentiation in coverage. So as Stu said, he sort of got really involved in watching ABC and decided to watch ABC because that content was different, perhaps felt a bit more relevant or personal, correct me if I'm wrong, because you were you were sort of taking part in it and you were seeing real results and live updated results and with real people rather than just perhaps listening to speeches on TV, which some of the other broadcasters would share.
And I've got to say this, so I watched the ABC coverage on Saturday night. I didn't see the Vote Compass being brought to bear in any of that coverage.
In that coverage, but generally from their morning reports, like the ABC Pun and Breakfast News always has heavily relied on the data from that, which I was always found quite interesting. As that data set grows, obviously becomes more representative. I just thought it was really interesting. I mean, there's other ways you could have leveraged it a bit further, so I mean, one question would be really interesting to see how they use that data now. So they've obviously created quite a significant amount of data points within that and opinion, all that stuff. Very valuable data as well, because it's quite a lot of personal preference and opinion. So it'd be interesting to see how they use that post the election. And also social, I think, is probably a bit of a missed opportunity. So ways you could kind of tap into that on a more ongoing, real-time basis would have been really interesting aspect to add to that.
I mean, it certainly paints a very interesting model for brands in this situation. So if you're a brand that's got a particular platform or particular territory that you're invested in, using social not as an end in itself, but using social as a way into data mine, and then service insights that feed that comms platform off the back of that, it's a phenomenally smart and emerging way to go about marketing and doing business, right?
Very much so. So it's just something, we use various tools here, PhD, to sort of get that sort of different level or depth of insight when we're looking perhaps at sort of researching for a brand or a campaign, to delve into that sort of social conversation and pull out more of the data and the insights of real people conversation and where is it happening and what platforms and channels are people using, and what times of day are they using it? What tapping into those insights as well gives a really a much more in-depth look at what, you know, when we're looking at stuff like that. So definitely a very powerful and growing, emerging area for social media.
Very cool, and that's our partnerships for this week. Just to round us off, which partnerships, given that it is Monday, it isn't Friday, which partnerships are people most looking forward to making themselves this week?
I'm personally looking forward to the partnership I'm going to have a Friday afternoon.
Excellent.
The partnership I'm going to have with Thursday morning, since it'll be when I finish my 10-day detox that I've been religiously following since last Monday.
So. Amazing. And how are you feeling now that you're, what, 5 days in? Six days in? Day eight. How are you feeling?
Great. I feel really good. I feel much, much better. So
glowing.
And you are. You're glowing, as you'll see from the photo above this. And Lauren, what are you looking to partner with?
I'm looking forward to storytelling training, actually, this week. It's a 3-day course that we're putting on here locally, and it's sounds very interesting, very exciting.
It should be good, it should be cool, and yes. And it will become... Oh, well, I'm hoping to make a partnership with the Nexus 7 this
Ooh.
Week.
Ooh.
It's been I've been too long since my former tablet was lost in a Sydney cab. So I'm going to re-equip myself with a smaller Androidy tablet and see what happens. So excited about that. And yes, storytelling training at PhD Australia and indeed OMG Australia New Zealand this week. And so this Friday's PhD cast will be a storytelling special. We'll be hearing from the people on that training about storytelling, what they learned, what it means, and the implications for how we communicate our stories going forward. That's it, I put it out there, now we've got to do it. So we'll be back on Friday with the PhD cast. Thanks very much for listening. Bye now.
Bye.
Get more from PhD Australia. You can like us on Facebook, you can follow us on Twitter, or find us on Google Plus at PhD Australia.